This is the FCB Podcast Network.
Okay, hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Marble Halls and Silver Screens. My name is Sarah Lee, and I have been gone for a few weeks, right? But I'm back today, so I've got a few things I want to just throw out there for you guys to consider before this weekend starts. Honestly, I think if you want to stay sane, maybe don't think so much about politics over the weekend. Enjoy your time with your family. Get out there and do the things that you like to do, whatever those things might be. And try to put some of this nonsense behind us, because things are nonsensical for real. But I'm going to give you a few things maybe to think about during Friday, today, and then put things away tomorrow. Watch some football, for goodness sakes. That's what I'll be doing. So I'm glad to be back. I hope you guys are glad to hear me. The things that I want to bring to you today are concerning some things that, well, the first part of the show is always about politics, and so I want to talk a little bit about immigration, specifically illegal immigration, because the Biden administration has just been all over the place regarding that, and it's been really hard to figure out what they're trying to do. So I actually wrote something about it, so I'm going to talk about that briefly. So there's that, and then I want to, there's so many good movies out right now, and I've seen none of them, especially if it means going to the movie theater. I just haven't had time to go and watch one of them. The one I want to see most right now is Triangle of Sadness, not because I think it'll be particularly good, it's just intriguing to me. So the subject matter is. So I'll keep that one on the list as a potential, but in lieu of going to the theater, I've been watching, you know, a lot of streaming, and I did happen to catch Mila Kunis in Netflix, Luckiest Girl Alive, and I rather enjoyed it, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Maybe it's a chick thing, but I'll talk a little bit about that. And then finally, I want to talk about an excellent Substack column that I read from Michael Schellenberger, who you may know from San Francisco, about what motivates the woke activists, and not only what motivates them, but like, what kind of people are they? Like, what are we dealing with here? So I want to talk about all those things, which we will, as soon as we hear from our sponsors and we come back, and we'll jump into all those things. So y'all sit tight and we'll be right back. Okay, howdy. All right, so let's talk about immigration, shall we? So the Biden administration sort of started out with Biden undoing any of the things that the Trump administration had done to combat illegal immigration. And I'm just going to go on record here and say, my great-grandparents were from Czechoslovakia. I may have mentioned this before. Leaving Eastern Europe because of some of the movements of communism in that area of the world, that region of the world. So I absolutely adore that the United States is a place that people leave their countries to flee to because they are looking for something better. That makes me very proud as an American. However, I don't think it's a very wise policy prescription to just sort of throw the border doors wide and not have some kind of managed control over the southern border. I think that's a very stupid way to do immigration. And it's also inhumane. A lot of these people that are coming, can't blame them, obviously, for coming, but they're ending up under bridges, or they're ending up in cities, and this is not blaming DeSantis. I think those political moves that DeSantis and Abbott made were fairly brilliant to try to bring attention to what the border states are going through. But they are ending up in places where they're not dressed appropriately for the cold, or they have no resources and no way to find jobs, etc. And this is not a call to fund nonprofits, which I'm going to get into. This is a call to maybe get a handle on what's going on at the border, okay? So throwing the border doors wide is just stupid policy. It really is. It's stupid international policy, foreign relations policy, domestic security policy. It's just bad policy all the way around. But that's what Biden did. He dismantled Trump's immigration sort of regime, stopped building the wall, although in recent months he's started rebuilding that. There are reports that he started funding some building of that again. He just dismantled what the Trump administration tried to do with Remain in Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. And again, there are some recent reports, which I'll get into very briefly, that shows that Biden has backed off some of these, some of this dismantling that he had done. But essentially what's happened is things have gotten very confusing because the situation has gotten so out of hand at the border. It's definitely a crisis, both for the people coming and for the people in the border towns trying to assimilate people coming into their towns illegally. The Biden administration could no longer ignore it. It had become such a problem, and they were trying to ignore it for some time. So what they've done now is they've started to look like they're backing off some of these, you know, sort of very strict, you know, ideas about illegal immigration, the position that they've always staked, which is, you know, no person is illegal, everyone should be allowed to come, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I should say they've staked it recently, the progressives have. It's not always been their line of, you know, policy on immigration, but it has been recently. So anyway, it's looked like they've started backing off a little bit of that. Biden recently expanded Title 42, which means that to Venezuelan immigrants, which means that they get sent to Mexico. Like I said, there's some reports that he had started to fund some of the construction of a border wall, which he had, you know, backed off of when he took office after Trump. There have been several things where it's looked like, okay, maybe he's starting to try to get this in hand. But when you look at the money that he has been giving to nonprofits that work with illegal immigrants, specifically illegal immigrants, people that come here and have nowhere to go, these are nonprofits that fund free legal services for people to fight deportation. Biden is giving a ton of money to these nonprofits. The most recent report, the most egregious, I mean, we're talking Catholic Charities, etc. But the most egregious recently was this sort of little-known nonprofit called Acacia, I want to say is how you pronounce it. Acacia Network for Justice or something along those lines. Very closely linked to the Vera Institute for Justice. I think it's Acacia Institute for Justice. Very closely linked to the Vera Institute for Justice, which is very, very left-leaning, you know, has a very pronounced leftist point of view on defunding the police, etc. The Biden administration, you know, using federal dollars funded, gave a gift to a grant, I think, to this Acacia Institute for Justice to the tune of something like $40 million. They also set up grant programs that are in smaller amounts, million here, million there, going to Catholic charities that are actually, there's some reporting that's saying that Catholic charities are helping move people into the sort of middle of the country away from the border. After they've come illegally, so they're not even there to be processed, right? So basically the argument that I make in the article that I wrote, which I'll link to in my column accompanying this podcast, is that if you're confused by what's going on with the Biden administration's policy on illegal immigration, all you have to do is look at the government funding going to nonprofits. It is very, very, very clear that they're very much in favor of continuing this crisis. I think on the surface, they don't want people to know that. So it looks like they're sort of backing off. The news reports show them kind of backing off some of this, but they're giving a lot of money to groups that actually are facilitating this. Betsy McCaughey, former New York Attorney General or Assistant Attorney General, I can't remember what her title was. She's a columnist now, and she has a really interesting piece. I'm not sure I agree with it totally, but it's certainly something to think about. that this is sort of money laundering, that the federal government is using tax dollars, despite what the taxpayers might actually think about this, to fund illegal immigration. And then there's this group, this very strange group called the International Organization for Immigration, I believe. International Organization for Migration. It comes out of the UN. It's partially funded by the U.S. State Department. There are reports from Epoch Times and other places that they're actually handing out, like Visa gift cards that are loaded with money and helping these people move into the country. So all of these, if all of this is true, it means that the policy toward illegal immigration is come in, you know, without checking in at the border, without being processed legally, without putting you on a path to citizenship. And that's why the crisis is where it is. Now, what do the progressive Democrats have to gain from this? I mean, the easy answer is that, you know, they can convince people here to vote for them. They have a real problem with American voters, as citizen voters, I should say, even people from other countries who are naturalized or who have been processed and become naturalized. They have a problem getting those people to vote for their really bad ideas. But I think if they can just get people who are somewhat ignorant of the system because, you know, they're not from here. They don't have any reason to know how the system works. Get them over here, pass laws like there are some that exist in California that allow, and I think New York, that allow illegals to vote. Then they have a shot at winning elections that maybe they wouldn't win otherwise. So that's the easy answer. But I'm not sure that that's the only answer. That's why I think Betsy McAuliffe's idea about this money laundering thing is very interesting. That's what she called it. They're flooding the nonprofits, which is something I study in my day job, with a ton of taxpayer money. It's not just on this issue, but on others. And it flows back to them. Okay, these nonprofits then create policy prescription white papers that say, hey, you know what we should do? And then they run on those ideas and they stay in power and it's a cycle. It's a circle. So, this is how it works. This isn't anything new. But I do think that the GOP and the Republicans are starting to take notice that there is a lot of money going into basically the charitable sector is being used to prop up politicians. And that's really not what it was designed to do. It was designed to help people. So immigration is just one example of how that's being done. And it's something that's interesting and we should be looking at very closely. So I'll leave that there and let's move on to The Luckiest Girl Alive. Okay. I didn't really know what to expect from this film. I'm a big fan of Mila Kunis. I just like her acting style. I think she's got a little edge and she's funny. The Spy Who Dumped Me, which I think hardly anyone has seen, is really, really funny. She's in it. So, I just like Mila Kunis. And as I said, I don't have a ton of time to go out to movies lately. So I'm just watching streaming things. And so that one popped up. It's ostensibly about a woman who had survived a school shooting at a private school. It's fiction. But there's also this subtext story as well. And it's about a woman who survives a school shooting and has to sort of grapple with the fact that the people who were being shot and killed in her school have done terrible things to her. It's not a dark comedy by any stretch, but it has the same sort of thematic elements as the film Heathers, right? Only Heathers is a comedy. It's just a very, very, very dark comedy, a very fantastic movie. But it's thematically very similar to Heathers. And you sort of get the Veronica, if you've seen Heathers, you know Veronica, Winona Ryder's character. That's the main character in Heathers. And you get that vibe from the main character in Luckiest Girl Alive. It has taken some heat because it does sort of not overly graphically, but uncomfortably enough portray rape of a teenage girl by teenage boys. It also kind of walks you through the school shooting. Again, it's not gory, but it is, it's a bit disturbing. I mean, it sort of puts you in there and like, how would you behave? How would you react? And I thought it was well done. I enjoyed it. It held my attention. I empathized with this character, not just because she'd been through this horrible thing. And I mean, I've never been through either one of those things that that this character goes through. So I can't imagine, you know, how difficult that was. But what's wonderful about shows like this, movies like this, is, you know, they are intended to be an extrapolation of what everybody goes through. So where your tragedy might not be as horrifying as a rape or a school shooting, we all have our little earthquakes, right? And so film, when it's done well, extrapolates those things out, makes them really, really big to make the point of like, this is how people deal with these things or don't deal with these things or deal with them poorly, right? So that's what this film does. It deals with, you know, sort of the little earthquakes that people have to negotiate when they're trying to, when they're ambitious and trying to, you know, rise up through the ranks and not sure that they're making the right decision about who they want to marry and maybe don't feel quite so bad when bad things happen to people who have wronged them. It's making those issues very, very big for you. And I enjoyed it for that. And I love watching Mila Kunis. I think she is a fascinating actress. And I wish she would do more because I think that she actually, there are times when I see real brilliance in her acting. You know, she's a mother and all of those things. And I think she's just kind of a cool chick and she doesn't need to get out there and just do things to wow you. But I find her to be an interesting person to watch. I'm not sure about her range. She does sort of play the same character a lot. But I think if she was given good material, she might be able to pull it off. So anyway, I recommend Luckiest Girl Alive, certainly to women. I don't know if men will like it as much. They might be a little horrified by it because it's definitely girl power stuff, but not in an obnoxious way. Some of the themes I think even men can relate to. And there are some good men in the show. It's not like we hate men. There are some good, decent male characters. Actually, the worst character in the film is a woman. So it's her mother. So yeah, so I thought it was a pretty good movie and I would recommend it. And I think it's certainly not for, I mean, I would actually recommend that, you know, older teenage girls watch it, frankly. There were a lot of things in there that I think they could make use of. So yeah, I liked it. Would recommend. So there's that. All right, finally, I want to talk just briefly about this article that I read on Substack about the sort of woke activists and what defines them. Michael Schellenberger, who I don't think would define himself as a conservative. I think he's from California, and he just started to look around at like San Francisco. He wrote a book called San Francisco. And, you know, during the COVID stuff and all of that. And he just started looking around and going, this is crazy. Everything's way out of control. And he began to become something of a critic of sort of the progressive activists, you know, bent. So he has a Substack and he wrote a really fascinating article recently on his Substack. Let me make sure I've got it up so that I can tell you exactly what the name of it is. It is The Quiet Desperation of Woke Fanatics. That's the title. And I highly recommend that you look it up and read it. Because what he's doing, this was in the wake of those two climate activists in England throwing soup at Van Gogh's very famous Sunflowers painting. Basically, what he's doing is he's trying to explain what drives these people. I take issue a little bit, don't totally agree with sort of his characterization that this sort of selflessness that they display. And he's using an author who he also doesn't totally agree with, which, you know, adults can do that, right? They can say, yeah, I agree with this part and I don't agree with that part. It's something we can do. I wish the kids would learn it. But he is using the writing of Eric Hoffer, who wrote a book called The True Believer back in the 1950s. And he mainly is talking about communists and Nazis and what sort of drives the sort of activism of these people, the sort of religious fanaticism. And Schellenberger does say that, you know, this kind of fanaticism that the Nazis, I think he actually outright says the Nazis are sort of a version of the cross, right? They're doing this selfless act, doing, as my sister would say, who works in theater, and she read a play and they produced a play many years ago that was about this same thing. And one of the characters says, you know, I'm doing a good one for the red man, okay? This meaning I'm helping them. They need my help. They don't know it, maybe, and they don't know it's for their own good, but it's what I do. So he says that this kind of fanaticism is akin to the cross. I take some issue with that because I draw a distinction between cult-like behavior and religion. I can get into that. First and foremost, I don't want to get into it too much, but first and foremost, you know, Abraham walked out into the desert. Jesus, you know, felt like the Jews of the day were not good Jews. So he began to preach what he saw as the true gospel. Abraham walked down into the desert because he heard a voice. Neither one of them was trying to start a religion, right? People began to follow because they agreed. Cults and fanatics require the followers, right? They need the army. So I draw a distinction there. I think the selflessness that's the same word. You can use the same word to describe it about what motivates these people. But I don't know. I do. It's like that whole thing about pornography. You know it when you see it. That's a really weird way. It's a really weird analogy, but so be it. I think you can use the same word that there's a selflessness to both kinds of movements, but religion is not cult and cult is not religion. I'll just put it that way. That does not mean that Schellenberger is wrong on essentially the entire article, because basically what Hoffer writes and what Schellenberg promotes is this idea that most woke activists are very bored elites who have a lot of ambition but not very much talent. And so they become very active. How does he put it? This is from Hoffer. The fiercest fanatics are often selfish people who were forced by innate shortcomings or external circumstances to lose faith in their own selves. They separate the excellent instrument of their selfishness from their ineffectual selves and attach it to the service of some holy cause. I think that's right. Hoffer goes into this notion of, you know, how all of the Nazis were like failed artists, right? And he goes through a list of those. Basically, Schellenberger and Hoffer both say that, and they're talking specifically mostly in this article about the climate fanaticism. And they basically are saying that these are little narcissists, narcissists that have been trained because our society, our culture in the West has become fairly nihilistic, which is interesting because part of the reason it's become nihilistic, which Schellenberger admits to, is that it's stopped seeing any meaning in life, that there's no, you know, we're all just animals. There's no greater movement of the cosmos. There's nothing, there's no invisible hand. There's, you know, to dust we come, to dust we shall go. In the meantime, it's just Sturm und Drang and we're done. Okay. So, you know, one of the great nihilists was Nietzsche, right? So it's no accident that the Germans had some trouble with this as well. So basically, what Schellenberger says is this depressing story has led the ostensibly secular elite, which are educated and indoctrinated in universities that teach nihilism as unquestioning scientific gospel, to create a new apocalyptic religion, climate catastrophe, complete with a new victim god, nature, a new reason for guilt, sins against nature, and a path for redemption, renewables, and low energy living. It and the broader woke religion have found intellectual ballast since World War II from Rousseau, Malthus, and Foucault. So I agree with all of that. Specifically, this group in the UK that was, you know, throwing soup at famous paintings, you know, they that group, the reason I put this article in, I think they're called Just Stop Oil. The reason I put this article in the entertainment section of the show is that that group, Just Stop Oil, is funded by the Getty and Rockefeller heirs, both oil magnates, and that the director, Adam McKay, of Don't Look Up, that film, and some other very funny ones. I think he did Step Brothers, too. He's on the board of directors of this group. So this sort of elitism, board elitism, is, you know, sitting in Hollywood, too. That's why they're so woke as well. And it's trouble. It's a problem. And I'll just say this to round it out. I've been watching documentaries lately because I'm a nerd, and I've always been an Anglophile since basically I was a teenager. There's a really good YouTube series called Chronicle on sort of the English crown, right? The houses, the English of the English monarchy. They had the same problem. They became very effete and ineffectual and bored elites and, you know, would just engage in wars for no reason and had very little moral, even though a lot of them were supposedly deeply tied to the church. There was a lot of bad stuff going on in the name of the church, right? So this is a Western problem, and it's certainly not relegated to the United States. Which I saw somebody today say, the U.S. is great, but I would rather raise my kids in Saudi Arabia, which is just absurd. But that's where we're at. That's the myth of how bad things have gotten. And it's perpetuated a lot by these dumb kids in Just Stop Oil or, you know, all the crazy stuff that goes on TikTok because China's like, look how bad the West is, right? So I think the answer to all of this is to Hollywood producing these films, we have to stop watching them and start putting our money toward films that actually have some meaning and you know, promote things that aren't just about bored cynicism. Stop paying attention so much to the nihilists and the anarchists. I mean, I saw something today that just made me laugh. A woman on Twitter had in her bio, not only did she say anarchist, but she also said private citizen. And I thought, those are mutually exclusive. You can't be both. So we have to stop giving these people attention. They have to go back to the fringe. I mean, they've always been fringe. It's just that, and what I mean by fringe is, you know, the lunatic fringe. and you can visit them when you want, but they've always been fringe in as much as there's not that many of them. Unfortunately, we have a progressive elite right now that's sort of, you know, at very high echelons of power trying to promote these people to the sort of, you know, decision-making status in business and banks, all of this stuff. So it's pretty hairy. I hope that we can come back from it. I think that we can, but I think it's important for us to all be reading people like Michael Schellenberger so that we're prepared intellectually to recognize what we're seeing when we see it. All right, on that negative note, I'm going to end things today. You guys, as usual, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be kind, be happy if you can. Find some joy, find some good things, be tough, be strong, and we'll talk again next week. There's a joker on the loose from the psychiatric ward. His face is up on the bulletin board with a report. He'll stab you with the sword. Don't be fooled. This has been a presentation of the FCB Podcast Network, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbpodcasts.com.